Welcome to Puentes, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is Mesilla Valley Hospital Referral Development Manager and Jason Foundation Representative, Jeannie Resendez, to tell us about the silent epidemic. Thank you for joining me on Puentes.
I want to thank you for having me, Emily. And I'm so happy to talk about the silent epidemic of youth suicide. Not that it's a happy topic. However, it's a really important topic that we need to be talking about.
Well, tell us about the Jason Foundation, how it is related to the Mesilla Valley Hospital, and how you are involved in all of this.
Yeah, well, Jason Foundation is a nonprofit organization, actually. But they partner with our corporate company through Mesilla Valley Hospital. And our corporate company is Universal Health Services. So basically, there are a lot of folks like myself who are Jason Foundation representatives across the country. And so this is the part of my job that I really, really love and has a special place in my heart. So what we do basically is we go out and we train anybody really, but mostly teachers, youth leaders, staff at schools, anybody who will let me basically talk with them. And we train them on how to identify youth that might be at risk for suicide.
And why is it called Jason Foundation?
Well, actually named after someone. His name was Jason Flatt. He was a 16-year-old boy. He lived in Tennessee. He was pretty much your average teenager, and I think that's what's most important for people to realize is that Jason was your average typical teen. He had a lot of friends. He was very involved in sports. He loved football. He went to church with his family. He wasn't known to be using drugs or alcohol. He was pretty much your average teen. Any teen you might see, or if you have children, you look at them, they just looks like any other teenager. But unfortunately, one day, Jason's father went home and found Jason dead. And unfortunately, he had shot himself. And he was gone. And you can imagine how any family might feel when they lose someone to suicide.
Had he left a note? Anything? Did they know what was going on?
No, that's the thing. I think one of those myths about suicide too is that people always leave a note and it's always pretty obvious, and it really isn't. And the family was left wondering why, what had happened. They felt guilty, of course, guilt is one of those things that people do feel most when they know someone that has died by suicide. So Jason didn't leave any kind of note. He didn't give any kind of warning signs, so they thought, until the father started researching suicide and discovering that, you know what, there are some warning signs. There are some things we can do to intervene. And out of this terrible tragedy, Jason's father, Clark Flatt, started this organization, the Jason Foundation. And it's been going on now since 1997. So, and they're based in Nashville. But again, like I said, they have offices throughout the country because that's the only way we can really change lives is trying to reach out to as many people as possible. So what we work towards every day is trying to educate people on the warning signs so that they will be able to identify those youth that could be at risk.
Give us some of the warning signs.
We look at 5 basic warning signs, but we always let people know that, you know what, there's probably other warning signs. It really is dependent on that person. And it's so individualized. When someone might be at risk for suicide or having mental health issues, it's very individualized. So it's really important to kind of know those individuals and kind of know when things might be wrong. We have 5 warning signs, and I'll let you know what we talk to people about. And the first one is basically when someone's making suicide threats. And that's pretty obvious, kind of, you know, if they're talking about killing themselves or they wish they were dead, those are obvious. But there are some other that are not as obvious, you know, someone who's just talking about, well, you know, maybe people won't miss me if I'm not around, or other things that might kind of go make you say, well, something's wrong there. There's a red flag. Why are you talking like this? So, yes, if you hear any of those types of threats or something you think might be a threat, definitely want to look further.
Is it giving away their things? Is that another sign?
That is another sign, actually. People will give away their possessions. And this happens, believe it or not, a lot. I think people have probably think a lot when I talk to people and do trainings, they're like, does that really happen? And it really does. They'll give away things that they really value. And what I do is I talk to people about how specifically, this is regarding youth, but a lot of this stuff can be related to adults and age, really. But what's most important is that a lot of times students or young people will just give away their things, whether it's an iPod, jewelry, whatever it could be. We teach adults and peers, because we have a youth program too, to recognize that, you know what, something might be wrong. Why are they giving away their stuff? Why are they saying goodbye? Especially if they're not moving, you know, those kinds of things. There might be something wrong that we need to kind of ask that person more.
In New Mexico, do we see a lot of high youth suicide?
Yes, there is a high rate of youth suicide here in New Mexico. Unfortunately, typically across the country, you know, suicide is the third leading cause of death for young people ages 10 to 24. That's the group that our programs are geared towards. But in New Mexico, it's actually the second leading cause of death for that age group. So we know that there's a higher rate of suicide. Now, the numbers are showing just recently that the numbers are decreasing, so to speak, but we're still higher than the national average. So no matter what, we have to still move forward with our prevention efforts. We're currently number 5 as far as where we rank as far as the number of suicides total in our country. So it's a pretty high number.
Who do you give these talks to?
I can go out and give talks to anyone, really, but I go to schools and I visit schools to try and train their school staffs. I can give presentations at civic groups, other groups like folks who work in juvenile justice services, other counseling agencies. I was just at a university, you know, to talk to university staff. So pretty much the range is unlimited, really. I can go out and talk to most folks except young people. And we do have programs for the youth, actually. We can provide curriculum kits at no charge to schools. And so they can actually teach the students about what to look for. And we do that kind of as a peer-to-peer kind of thing. What would you do if your friend's having problems? What would you do if you saw some of these warning signs? Those kinds of things. And I wanted to follow up on what we were talking about as far as the warning signs, too, because we did talk about suicide threats and then people who give away their possessions. But I also wanted to talk about an important one, too. That's also depression. So I know we hear lots of talk about depression and mental health issues. Depression is a big one. It really, if someone does have depression, it puts them at a real high risk for suicide, especially if it's untreated, because a lot of people don't realize that they can get treatment for it, or perhaps the stigma surrounding it all. They don't want to go on medications or stuff like that without realizing that, you know what, there is help and that it can actually improve your life. So if someone has depression, especially young people, that definitely does make them more at risk.
What are some of the high stressors for young people?
For young people? Well, it's true they don't necessarily have to worry about paying for bills, but they do take on kind of that stress when their families are having a hard time paying bills. I know specifically in New Mexico, that's a really big problem because of our high poverty rate, a lot of economic issues going on. So yeah, when you're looking at problems at home, maybe economic problems within the family, you know, a lot of people losing their jobs, people being unemployed, that really has an effect on the kids in that house. Which someone's already having some mental health issues, then they're deciding, you know what, I cost a lot to my family, you know, maybe if I wasn't around, I'd be better off, you know, those kinds of things too. They start to generate those thoughts. But yeah, other issues can include young people who get involved in drugs and alcohol. You know, a lot of times people use drugs and alcohol to kind of self-medicate, and then that just puts them even more at risk. So, and it's a lot of times it's more, did they start using drugs and alcohol before or after the problems, or are they doing it as a result of having, you know, some mental health issues? When it comes to youth, you know, it could go either way. So that puts them at risk. Other issues include just pressure, you know, academic pressure. There's also the issue of bullying, something we talk about too when I talk to school staff, parents, and other groups, is that the whole issue of bullying is not necessarily on the schoolyard anymore. You know, the whole idea of bullying related to, like, social media, texting, those kinds of things, you know, that we do hear about a lot within the media now. We are talking about it more, but not realizing how it really has an impact on someone's emotional well-being.
Maybe so. Videos that they've taken, because with all these new phones, they have capabilities of so many things.
Right. I mean, and instant access, really. Anybody could send a message to a whole group of people that could be really detrimental to someone's, you know, mental health or emotional well-being. Same goes that nowadays we have access to all kinds of information. Like within the palm of your hands, a lot of kids have smartphones and they can access any amount of information they need to, or if they're on the computer. So they're reading about wars, they're reading about problems in the world, or just other issues that weren't necessarily at our fingertips as we were younger, growing up, that now today kids are totally exposed to all those images. So it really has an effect on our emotional well-being and how we see the world. And so that's also another factor.
Are girls more susceptible than boys?
Girls actually attempt suicide more often than boys. But the fact is that boys actually complete suicide more often. And that really has to do a lot with choice of means. And we do know that boys tend to choose more lethal means when they decide they're going to take their life. And a majority of them do use firearms. And girls had tended to use other methods, such as overdosing or maybe suffocation method, where you have that window of opportunity. to kind of find out if they need help and then get them to medical services. Obviously, with a firearm, sometimes it's, you know, your opportunity is a little less to intervene. But unfortunately, there's also a trend that girls are tending to choose more lethal means, too. So if that does follow through, we will start to see more suicides completed by girls, too.
Is that because arms or guns are more accessible now?
It could be. What I always talk about when I do my trainings for JSEM Foundation is really just to let people know that, you know what, the most important thing is the access. Access to guns is the key here as far as preventing suicide. So if you have someone in your home that you think might be at risk, especially young people or children, you know, you want to keep those guns locked up, inaccessible to the young people or someone who has chronic mental illness too. So I know that's a big debate right now that, you know, it's not really my part to take a stance on that, but I always just encourage people to keep things safe. And access is a huge thing, so making them inaccessible.
Well, the medicine cabinet is also another arm.
Right, and the medicine cabinet, that's another thing too, especially when you're talking about youth, because youth today, there's a huge trend, and not just with youth, with all population really, as far as abusing even prescription medications or over-the-counter medications, things that you thought were safe in your medicine cabinet. Of course, now we have to really watch out because there's many, many risks as far as having access. So again, it's like keeping your cleaning chemicals away from your children, keeping them locked up, keeping them safe. The same goes for guns, medications, etc., because always safer than sorry.
And what is one of the strongest things that you stress to parents?
It's to really open those lines of communication. So when I do parent trainings, I give them all the information, you know, statistics, warning signs, etc., all that kind of important information. But the bottom line is just opening those communication lines is very important. I think we get very busy in our daily lives. I am guilty of that too. You know, you get busy doing things. You know, you think, oh, my kids are going along kind of on autopilot, but you know what? They need to talk sometimes. And they actually listen to us, even when they become teenagers. So that's very, very important as far as a parent being able to get to know their child. Just talk regularly with them. If you notice that they're having a bad day or notice something that they're struggling with something, talk. Even if sometimes you get that, oh, I'm fine, one line answers, you know, just keep making yourself available to them. And so knowing when things are a little bit different, like one of the other warning signs we talk about too is noticing out of character changes in behavior, which is one of those things that's a little bit difficult to detect, especially in adolescents, because they're constantly changing anyways. They're trying to find their identity. They're trying to become who they think they want to be, who they are, whether it's to fit in or whether they're just trying to find out who they are, really. But there are certain changes that we notice that can be, you know, kind of red flags.
Like what?
Well, if you're noticing, you know, especially for kiddos who, or young people, I should say, that are doing really well in school, and all of a sudden they just start having failing grades, not wanting to complete assignments, not wanting to go to school, you want to know why. And so whether it's a parent or a teacher, you know, I always tell, ask the question, what's going on? Why are you having these problems? You know, what's bothering you? So other things too, they could change friends. They could start hanging out with a different crowd, or they could withdraw completely from their friends and not want to do any activities. One of the things that happened with Jason Flatt, was that he was starting to withdraw from his friends. He didn't want to play football anymore. So those were those kind of signs that were happening, but kind of seemed normal at the same time. So some warning signs and some things, some changes in behavior kind of seem normal, but it's really about knowing that person. Other signs are changes in character, kids getting more aggressive, more irritable, changing their sleeping, eating habits, their appearance. And I don't mean someone, like a lot of kids come in dressed all in black, and we're not going to say that they're suicidal per se, but if they're changing how they dress, maybe they don't care how they look anymore, and they're depressed, and they're having problems at home, those kinds of things together, that's when you really want to start worrying. So when things happen in multiples and when they persist over a long period of time.
And so what do you tell them as far as trying to prevent these things? How do you attempt to do that?
Well, if they notice these things that are going on, they see that there's some problems, I always just suggest to them that if they're ever concerned or if their gut's telling them something's wrong, to get professional help. And that could mean bringing it up to the school counselor or the staff there. It could mean seeking out professional help, whether it's for counseling or therapy, talking with their family physician, any of those things, as long as they're reaching out for some kind of help. The worst thing to do probably is just to think, well, it's not that serious, or they're not really serious. And some of that could be. I mean, we all remember how adolescence is. It's a very challenging time. And we go through things and then we're fine. But not everyone is able to go through that period of time and just be fine. Sometimes people need a little help, just like with anything and at any age, really. But we always suggest to get professional help in whatever capacity that is, in whatever way that is, to do that, because you never know when you might be dealing with someone who could actually decide to take their life. And we always say, take any kind of threat seriously, any kind of maybe even half-hearted attempt, a suicide attempt seriously. What we hear sometimes from not just parents, but other adults too, is like, oh, they just wanted attention. The fact is, maybe their intent, but there needs some attention there. I mean, something is going on. There's some kind of issue going on. And whether that person was truly suicidal or not is really not up to us to make that decision. It's really up to a professional to kind of evaluate that person. So that's my biggest suggestion there, is to get some kind of help and not to take it all on your own shoulders, thinking, well, we want to keep this within the family. We don't want to tell anybody. But that's probably the worst thing you can do, just simply because getting some help, at least you'll have someone else kind of helping you go through it, helping identify some of the warning signs, and really working to get that person help.
And what are some of the most effective programs of prevention?
The Jason Foundation basically works with a triangle of prevention. And what that basically is that we want to work with educators, school staff, the parents, and then peers, or the young people, I mean, the youth. So we work on all those levels. And the only way to be effective in any of our prevention efforts is going to be to educate all three of those groups. Because how often does a kid confide in their friend that they're having problems but not confide in their parent? Or maybe parents are aware of something that's going on with that young person but don't relay that to the school. So we have to have everyone educated. And again, that's one of our programs. It's called the Promise for Tomorrow curriculum, and it's just specifically for schools. For 7th grade all the way through 12th grade, they can actually teach this curriculum to kind of help students understand what to look for in their peers as far as what warning signs can be there, how to prevent one of their friends from maybe taking their own life or noticing when someone's having some problems.
So is this just one class or is this a semester of various classes?
Actually, it's like a 3 to 5 day lesson plan, and we provide the kits. It's like a PowerPoint program, a teacher handbook included, all the materials included. So the teacher can choose how they want to implement the program within their lesson plan. And that's really difficult. We know that the schools are busy and the days are packed, but it's a great program to kind of implement. It usually takes just a couple days to kind of teach and go through the program with the students.
So do you go through the program with the students or do you go through the program with the educators and the parents?
My direct involvement is with the educators and the parents. And then I work with the educators to kind of provide the kits and kind of I can do demonstration as far as like, okay, well, here's how the program works. Here's what you do. We as Jason Foundation representatives don't actually go in and do youth presentations because it is better for those students to have someone that they can connect with that's going to be there tomorrow and the next day and the next day. So that way they can feel connected to that person that's talking to them about this because it's a real sensitive topic, obviously. I mean, even doing presentations for educators and parents and agencies, I almost always have someone come up to me at the end with a story of their own or just start crying. It's very powerful. And when I do the program, when I first started doing it, because I've been doing it now, next month will be 5 years. When I first started doing it, it was pretty emotional to get through this hour and a half training. And in that time, you're usually discussing issues and some people have very personal stories to tell. And so it can be pretty overwhelming. And so another thing we do at the end of our presentations, our trainings, is that we kind of have a slideshow and a real special song. And so we see the faces of those young people that have been affected and have died. And that's a tough one to watch and go through.
So have you been able to see in a prevention of a suicide, do you know of a case?
A specific case, no, but I do, when I go and talk to, let's say I've done some schools, within our region here in southern New Mexico, and I go visit with them afterwards. They are just very thankful to have had the training. And then they'll usually tell stories of, you know, we have had students that have been at risk, past suicides that have happened for that school or in that community. But most of the time, you always have someone come up to you afterwards and say, you know, this happened, I lost this person, or we lost a student, or those kind of things. So we can only hope that our efforts are working. We do know that our curriculum that goes into the schools is evidence-based, so it does work, and there have been results. And they test it as far as how kids feel beforehand and afterwards, as far as their curriculum is concerned. And it always works as far as bringing about education and awareness. And I think one of the things, too, with all of this is there's this myth. There's lots of myths thinking about suicide, but one of the myths that I talk about in the trainings is that if you talk about it, it's going to make it happen. So if you talk to someone about suicide, that's going to make them take their life, and that simply isn't true. Talking can actually help. And so that's one of the things I always talk about during the presentations, is that talking can actually have such a positive impact. Of course, we can't save someone or solve all their problems just by talking. But you know what? Now that person knows that someone cares, someone noticed, and maybe we can kind of get them to the next step in getting some help.
So if an individual would like some information, do they come to you or to the Jason Foundation, or is it an organization that would come to you for the training?
For training? Well, people can contact me directly for sure. They could start by going online. They can look at jasonfoundation.com. And it has all the information, kind of stuff that we talked about, trainings, etc. There's even links there to actually contact your local representative. And people do this too. They'll hear about it and then they'll contact me directly at Mesilla Valley Hospital. So they can contact me that way. They can go straight to jasonfoundation.com and I can set things up that way. And they can actually call us. And the local number here is 575-382-3500, or they can go to our website, MesillaValleyHospital.com.
I appreciate for you to come down to Puentes, being a bridge to the community, which is something so important to be able to learn about suicide prevention. And again, thank you, Mesilla Valley Hospital Referral Development Manager and Jason Foundation Representative Jeannie Resendez. Thank you for telling us about the silent epidemic of youth suicide.
Thank you very much, Emily.
You're welcome. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.